And not only the weather, but also the food and melodies are also different from the countries in the Northern Hemisphere. Thank you again for your beautiful message and Happy New Year to all the listeners. Salam and warm greetings to you. And I do appreciate you for this email. And we wish you peace, joy, love and good tidings in the new year 2023. And of course, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Reginaldo Anuncioso from Brazil, who lives in Southern Hemisphere, and as you said, the weather, the food and melodies are very different from the countries in the Northern Hemisphere, and the atmosphere is in Christmas and the New Year is so different with the people who live in the Northern Hemisphere, just like those people who live in Australia and New Zealand and other countries in the Southern Hemisphere. It was great. Reginaldo Anuncioso from Brazil, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. And here we come to the end of our program. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best. God bless and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قالوا سواء علينا أوعظت أم لم تكن من الواعظين
They said, it is all the same to us whether you advise or are not of the advisers.
إن هذا إلا خلق الأولين
This is not but the custom of the former peoples.
وما نحن بمعذبين
And we are not to be punished.
فكذبوه فأهلكناهم إن في ذلك لآية وما كان أكثرهم مؤمنين
And they denied him, so we destroyed them. Indeed, in that is a sign. But most of them were not to be believers.
Dear listeners, as you were previously with us, we are done with the 135th verse. And now, the next verse of chapter Shu'ara. قالوا سواء علينا أوعدت أم لم تكن من الواعظين The 136th verse says, They said, it is the same to us whether you admonish or be not of the admonishers. So, by explaining the previous verses, you know that those verses contain the expressive words of the sympathetic Prophet Hud, على نبينا وآله وعليه السلام, with his rebellious people, the odd people. His statements ended with a kind of warning. إِنِّي أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ عَذَابَ يَوْمٍ عَذِيمٍ Verily, I fear for you the chastisement of a great day. And this is a prophet. He is totally sincere with the words. When he says, إِنِّي أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ He is really afraid for his people. Because those are his people. He is أخوهم هود, as the Holy Quran explains. He is one of their brothers somehow. So if you want to somehow sympathize with the people, you need to be from them so that like this, they might accept your call. They might return to themselves, think about the blessings, and accept the concept of monotheism. It would be better for us to think about all the different methods of invitation of the prophets from the beginning of this very chapter, chapter Shu'ara, and how the Almighty Allah introduces these prophets and how they set their plans to invite their own people. They had different methods, all of which leads to inviting people to monotheism, but with different ways and different methods. Some started with the warning. Some started with mentioning the different blessings of the Almighty Allah and somehow stimulating the sense of thanksgiving in them, etc. So this is really important, how every prophet is talking to their own people. Because with different people, you need to talk like them.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, We will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Anyway, dear listeners, now the Holy Quran in this 136th verse refers to the irrational, vicious answers of that group of people who told Hud that he would not put himself into trouble because it was indifferent to them whether he admonished them or not, and his admonition would not have any effect on their hearts. قَالُوا سَوَاءٌ عَلَيْنَا أَوَعَذْتَ أَمْ لَمْ تَكُمْ مِنَ الْوَعِذِينَ They said, it is the same to us whether you admonish or be not of the admonishers. This is really significant. If you are not ready, if there is no capacity and readiness in the people to accept the truth, even if the words are coming from the mouth of a prophet, even if the truth is presented by an infallible imam or by a prophet, the people would not accept because they do not want to. So here in this case, they even explicitly say that your admonitions are not going to affect us because our hearts are sealed. سَوَاءٌ عَلَيْنَا أَوَعَذْتَ أَمْ لَمْ تَكُمْ مِنَ الْوَعَذِينَ This is a very heavy statement for a prophet that does his best to invite people. He sympathizes with them. He says, إِنِّي أَخَافُ عَلَيْكُمْ He is sincerely telling them that I am so worried about you. But in answer, in return, what he gets is, سَوَاءٌ عَلَيْنَا أَوَعَذْتَ أَمْ لَمْ تَكُمْ مِنَ الْوَعَذِينَ They say it is the same to us. You want to admonish or not, we are persisting, we are continuing on what we were doing previously. We will, God willing, move on to the next verses and how they continue this irrational answers of theirs in the next episode. Thank you for staying with us in this episode, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, Take care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble question. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a very important question. And that question is about the meaning of Islamic unity. Some people might say that, you know, Islamic unity, a lot of people are against Islamic unity, right? And you know, the objection they bring up to this is this, that, you know, when we become friendly with other madhahib, right, every person believes that his own madhab, his own faith, his own sect, the Islamic sect he's following is right, right? And it's, he believes that the other ones are incorrect, right? Unless, he believes in pluralism in religious matters, which is, most likely not the case. He says that, this is, my faith is correct. The faiths of other peoples are incorrect, right? When such a person, right, if we ask him to be friendly with, faith, with people of other faiths and unite with them, right? In harmony with them, right? So in essence, we're asking him to call into question his own beliefs, right? And to believe that matters of faith are relative, and the other person following the other faith, he could also achieve salvation. And this is impossible, right? Based on his belief that his own faith is correct, right? So Islamic unity is an ideal. It's beautiful, right? But practically speaking, it's not something that Muslim with a strong opinion of his own faith could actually achieve without somehow weakening his faith, right? So this is an objection that some people mention.
Right. So in response to this, we can say that when we say that Muslims should unite and Islamic unity is good, we don't want to say that, you know, people should, call into question, you know, their own faith and, come into, adhere to the belief that people of other madhahib or even other religions, right, they could go to achieve salvation, and so on and so forth. What we want to say is that, people within Islamic fold, we shouldn't, instead of attacking one another violently and killing one another, we should work together, and come and agree upon, come together and unite upon the things we all agree upon and we all agree are correct. Like, for example, the Quran, the prophethood of the prophet, very basic, jurisprudential matters that all of us, we agree on, and then, and regarding the differences and distinctions that we have, we should come and sit together and come together and, try to reach a definitive conclusion upon who's on the truth and who's not, right? This is what Islamic unity means. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at Islamic unity. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Eye on Islam.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you, and welcome to Eye on Islam, the show where we look at current affairs through an Islamic lens and break it down from a Muslim perspective. On today's show, we'll analyze what might be behind the suspicious murder of an Iranian Sunni imam who was found dead after initially being kidnapped earlier this month in southeastern of the Islamic Republic. So who was Molavi Abdulwahid Righi and why was he killed? This next report will shed some light on this upsetting episode.
An Iranian Sunni cleric was kidnapped and murdered by unknown assailants in early December amid ongoing Western-backed anti-Iran violence across the country. Molavi Abdulwahid Righi was the Friday prayers leader of Imam Hussein Mosque in Khash, a southeastern county in Sistan and Balochistan province. Local forces had been mobilized to find the whereabouts of the cleric, but his dead body was found not long after his disappearance on a roadside with three bullet wounds to the head. Prior to his death, Molavi Righi expressed strong support for the Islamic Republic of Iran and admitted his views earned him death threats. Iranian authorities have issued warnings against enemy plots aimed at destabilizing Sistan and Balochistan, a region home to many Sunni Muslims. Sectarianism is a tried and tested tactic used by the West to destroy Muslim countries who fail to submit to Western political hegemony. Iran may be facing the same challenge. Meanwhile, the violence has claimed the lives of dozens of people and members of security forces, while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country.
Well, joining us in the studio today are two esteemed guests. The first is Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, a UK-based Muslim scholar and lecturer who studied inside Iran for many years, and Masood Shajaray, the head of the London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me on the show today. Masood, I'm going to come straight to you on this because you may have met the martyred Maulana a few times in the past. Could you just start off by telling me what your impression was of the man?
Yes, he was well known as a scholar and someone who supports the concept of unity and the Islamic Republic foundation and the leadership. He was receiving a lot of death threats and the pressures from external sources and so forth, but he really was one of those exceptional scholars, Sunni scholars, who was not only believing in it, but was extremely vocal in his support. And in reality, I think we need to understand that this is the position of overwhelming majority of Sunnis within Iran. I was in Qesh last year, and when I went around and I saw the sort of reflection of the unity, you know, there were Shia mosque, Sunni mosque, Adhan, few sort of minutes in different timing. But, you know, people, and when you talk to people, everybody wasn't seeing what the problem is. And Qeshm is one of those areas where it's almost 50-50. And people were articulating to me that they intermarried. They really didn't see problem there. The problem seems to be more something is a creation of an image that is created outside by sort of individual sort of agents and those who actually want to create disunity. And we know that divide and rule is one of the things colonials have done and used as effectively over years and years.
Do you think that that's what we're seeing happening now in the south? East of the country, you think that perhaps there's some kind of attempt to divide Sunnis and Shias?
Oh, this has been going on since the beginning of the revolution. I mean, if you look at how many anti-Shia books were before the revolution, you hardly could see it. You know, there was probably one or two. When you look at the Ikhwan al-Muslimin sort of leadership, there was always Shia and Sunni sort of representation, even at that level. And but what we are seeing now after the revolution, there were books after books after books being published in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere, pumping this sort of idea of these are others, they're not one of us. And I remember in UK, I was running and was involved in running of a mosque. And as everybody knows, I've come from a Shia background, but the mosque was actually a Sunni mosque, and I was the vice president of it in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And we were going around trying to find Qurans from different places. And when we went and approached, you know, Central Mosque and other places in London to get some Qurans, we couldn't find Qurans, but they were actually willing to give us tons and tons of books which are sectarian promotion. So really that was happening just very clearly, and you could see it so clearly, and that has continued since then till now, and has become more sophisticated.
For sure. Sheikh Hanif, let me bring you in on this discussion, because again, you've been to Iran, you know perhaps what it's really like there behind the negative headlines which we've seen circulating around. Last episode, we discussed the fact that there are anti-Iran protests going on right now, but it seems like this assassination of a minority religious leader is something different here. What's your impression of what's going on in Iran right now?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I don't think it's different. I think, first of all, you know, it's a natural human tendency to love each other. That's the most powerful tendency, right? You know, people of different ethnic groups, racial groups, religious groups, and so on, living together normally, all right, they will build bridges with each other. The differences or hostility between these groups always come from the outside and always come from people who find, or communities or countries or whatever, or political interests and so forth, that find it important for you to have a division in order to control for their benefit, okay? As Brother Mahsoud, you know, correctly stated, before the Islamic Revolution, you know, you would hardly find anti-Shia books in the Sunni community, okay? after the Islamic Revolution, which is calling for the Muslims to overthrow Western imperialist domination, okay, you find a plethora of anti-Shia books in the community, and even anti-Sunni type of things also appearing in the Sunni community by those people who are partners in that project. Okay, so that project is not, it will exploit both sides. Okay, now when we're talking about the Mahsa Amini thing, all right, it is quite interesting that first of all, yes, you had this anti-Shia stuff going on and a lot of infiltration into Iran and so on. But you also find it coincides with the Russia-Ukraine war, you know, and the fact that Iran is supporting Russia, you see, in this. And if you see the increased intensity, right, for example, in places like Pakistan, you know, making almost extortionate demands on countries in Africa and Asia and so forth, to force people to take a side on this, you see this Mahsa Amini thing started to ramp up. Okay, so I think the assassination of Shahid Rig and you know, the Mahsa Amini thing and the Russia-Ukraine aspect, all of these things are coming together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And with respect to Iran, they're using classical, you know, I don't know if you'd call it soft power or you know, regime change by stoking what are not really divisions, but could potentially be divisions in a society. For example,
they're
divisions
looking for wiggle room, somewhere to exploit.
Yeah, you perhaps. Know, divisions in belief, male female type of things. You know, youth, you know, older generation things, right? Mm. All of these things are natural sort of like, you know, not really divisions, but, you know, categories in society, if one could call it that, you see? And
the areas to exploit that. Use the economy to their benefit, that type
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly.
Yes, you
know?
For sure.
So I think, you know, people who are, you know, cognizant of the trends of history would be able to pick that up.
Now, Masoud, before we move on to the next segment, you've got about a minute left or so. I want to ask you, we don't actually know. I think there's been some arrests made, but they're still investigating who conducted this assassination. Could you perhaps give your opinion on who potentially could be behind it? What are the anti-Iran groups that are active at the moment?
Well, really, to pinpoint who did it at the name and the sort of so forth, it is difficult. That's a security forces thing. But it's obvious that those who are threatening him, those who actually want to create this conflict, those who want to create this otherization, that separation, as the brother said, those are the ones behind it. What they seem to be concentrating on is to turn Iran to another Libya, to another Syria. And for that, any division, any conflict is actually is picked up and amplified. And this amplification is also seen more outside, like Syria and Libya, seen more outside than inside. But also, I think what is important for people inside to recognize is that the lives of everyone in Libya, in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan was shattered through this intervention and conflict creation of the West, and which has served no one except the weapon manufacturers and the State of Israel to sure. have a conflict in the whole region.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your opinion so far. We are going to come back to the discussion. But first, let's take a moment to browse through some online opinions and reactions to the shocking and disturbing news of the scholar's assassination. We have a tweet coming here which says, all praise be to Allah and to Muhammad and his blessed family. May God preserve the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is from Abu Muhammad 16, who adds that His Eminence, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, and all of those who are working vigilantly to protect the Islamic Republic, Godspeed to them. We have another tweet coming in from Ashraf as well, who gives a very strong opinion. He makes a very bad point, saying that may his soul be rest in peace. It's tragic how the enemies of Islam
and peace, despise Muslim unity. Remember, Martin Luther King was supposedly ready to unite with Malcolm X. All of a sudden, there was an assassination attempt, a very valid point, I think, which can be used to compare perhaps what's happening here in Iran. Let's move on to Rahul now, who comes in with another strong opinion, who adds that he makes very, very clear that they should arrest all of these terrorists, do whatever they have to in order to resolve the situation. These terrorists want to turn Iran into another Libya or Syria. And finally, let's move over to an opinion coming in from JJ, again on Twitter, who says, killed by those looking to turn Shia and Sunni against one another for political gain. Just think who would gain from that. Sectarianism is a tried and tested tactic used by Western powers to divide and rule the Muslim world. That's absolutely clear. This next report touches on how and why these tactics have been successful in the past and used to weaken the Ummah so much.
Western colonialists have long sought to drive a wedge between Sunnis and Shias across the Muslim world as a means to divide and weaken the Muslims. And this is also the case in Iran, which has a large minority of Sunni Muslims living within its borders. Sunni Islam and Shia Islam are the two great Islamic orthodoxies which comprise the vast majority of the Muslim Ummah. Sunnis believe that the Prophet's companion, Abu Bakr, Umar and Uthman were his rightful successors, where Shias believe that the Prophet's son-in-law and cousin Ali should have been his heir. At first, the differences between the two Islamic strands were simply political, but they later developed some theological differences too. That said, the commonalities between the two main strands of Islam are far greater than their differences, and Sunnis and Shias have largely coexisted in harmony throughout Islamic history. Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has repeatedly emphasized the need for Islamic unity so that the Ummah can successfully revive. He has also repeatedly said that Shias must not harm the sanctities of the Sunnis. But despite this, the imperialists and Takfiris are trying to falsely claim Iran is anti-Sunni with the ultimate goal of weakening the Islamic Republic.
Well, let's head back to our guest discussion now, and I'm going to bring in Sheikh Hanif once again. Tell me, you was in Iran for many, many years. You know what it's really like there. There seems to be this misconception pushed sometimes that Iran is like this Shia majority country, which is intolerant to its Sunni minority. And I've heard things like there are no Sunni mosques in Tehran, for example. Could you just clarify if that's the case or not?
I have traveled quite extensively in the south of Iran, where a lot of the Sunni population is concentrated. I've also been to Kurdistan, which is quite majority Sunni. And I see on the community level, there's no hostility, there's intermarriage. You know, Sunnis have their own masajid. You know, Shias could come in there and pray. They have their own madrasas, okay, that are independent, you know. And you don't see on the social level any kind of tension, you know. I wouldn't doubt that you would have probably elements that might be sectarian. I think this is something that occurs in religious communities by and large. You know, there might be people who might have these types of tendencies, but you don't, when I was there, they were not dominant as an idea in the community. Yeah. So I really don't see a problem. You know, the same was like in Iraq, for example. In Iraq, you know, you had Sunnis and Shias getting married and so on. As soon as the Americans want to take over the oil and so forth, then you find a propagation of anti-Sunni, anti-Shia stuff going on in Iraq. Mm-hmm. You know, people who were married, you know, families were broken up and so on. And I think, you know, basically when you find these types of phenomena, you have to ask the question, who has the most to benefit from this? Mm-hmm. You know, I would always, always go back to basically Western and American interests.
Masoud, I want to ask you again, you know Iran very, very well. Do you think that Iran is perhaps vulnerable to the same type of sectarianism push from the West, as say other countries in the region have been, like Iraq, for example?
When I went to Pesh last year, even I was surprised the level of the unity on the grassroots. I mean, you know, talking to the taxi driver, talking to people around the city. You know, I was so conscious to find out what is really going on that level, because, you know, any other level could be manipulated. And people genuinely were saying, we don't have a problem. There are efforts to create these problems, but we are united. We are so sort of almost together, you know, bonded together. But there are elements, you know. I mean, look, in Iraq, what happened, I remember two British soldiers dressed up in Arab clothes were arrested, armed to the teeth with bombs, and they were arrested. What do you think they were doing? You know, if you go to one community and dressed up as that community and bomb the other side, and then next day go to the other community and bomb the opposite side, even if there are people two sides of same street and have no other difference other than that, they start fighting each other because they see people from that side of the street are attacking this side and from this side to that side. So it's easy to create that. And I've been involved. We have a program called Charter 3103, which is from the verses of Quran, at Tasmo Bahamdullahi Jamian. We go for conflict resolution. We have done these settings in Pakistan, in Indonesia, in Malaysia. And it's been extremely successful, bringing people from the Salafi background, from Sufi background, from Shia background. And when you put people together over a few days, praying together, eating together, joking together, and so forth, you see the bonding. And, you know, people going through that process usually come back and they say, look, before we used to go to studio of TV studios and we used to really go for each other. Now, we're ashamed of doing that. Mm. We actually cannot go for each other that way because on the level of heart being brought together. And I think the verse is actually deals with that. It's not a political unity. Allah says, unite. And you remember the times that you were separate from one another, then I brought your hearts together. Mm-hmm. So we need to unite on the level of heart, on the level of, you know, brotherhood and so forth. And I think the other really important thing is that the creative illusion, and I've seen it. I was giving a talk once, and a brother from a Salafi background got up. He said, what you're saying about unity is fantastic, but it's impossible. Mm. I told him that, well, look, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala orders us to unite. Do you think Allah is joking with us? They're asking us to do something which is impossible? Mm. The impossibility is being put in our brain. It's not the reality.
Wow.
It is possible, and we need to work on it, and we need to get rid of these illusions that the enemy is creating to divide us.
That's a very strong story to end your point on. I'm going to come back to you, Sheikh, on this and ask you about this concept of Islamic unity. I think right now we do live in an age where there does seem to be a divide between Muslim communities on many issues. Sectarianism to a degree perhaps has been partly successful, but do you think that this concept of Islamic unity is possible, and if so, how can we get there?
I don't think it's possible. I think it's natural. It's not just possible, it's natural. I mean, when you look at the history of Islam, okay, you never found a situation, you very rarely would you find a situation where people are forced to convert to Islam, you know, in contradiction to Western propaganda, okay? In fact, what you would find that in the Christian countries, okay, you had more intolerance, okay, than in Muslim countries for other religions, not to mention other Muslim sects or points of view, okay? So when you look at, for example, classical Spain and Al-Andalus, which was Islamic country, 100% Islamic country, that was close to 800 years for 800 years. When you look at the golden age in Iraq, you know, you find a confluence of different thought, Christian philosophy, Buddhist philosophy, you know, Pahlavi philosophy and the sciences and so forth. Everybody was free. You found that some of the greatest advances in traditional Jewish thought was under Maimonides, you know, who was living in Islamic Spain and had that freedom to do this.
Yes, that's okay? Right.
Okay, all right. So when you could have that type of unity with other religions and cultures, you know, what about between Islam, you know, between Muslims? You see, when you look at the Christian world, however, you know, you have things like the Hundred-Year War, you know, between Christians. You know, you had Christians slaughtering each other.
The Dark Ages, you see what I mean? During the Islamic
exactly.
Golden Age, wasn't it?
You know, when they retook Andalus, you know, you had blood flowing in the streets with you know, from Jews and Christians. When the Jews were fleeing this persecution, where did they go? Did they go north to Germany? No, man, they went south to Morocco. Because they knew Muslims would be tolerant towards them. This whole new idea of Muslim intolerance and so forth is actually fomented by these puppets of the West. Saudi Arabia, for example, you know, elements within these countries and so forth. So I think we have to be able to be cognizant of history to be able to understand these things.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Unfortunately, we are out of time. There's so much more we could have discussed, but we'll have to leave it there for the time being. And thank you to everyone at home for joining us for this edition of Eye on Islam. But for now, it's Assalamu Alaikum.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
When we talk about our present Imam and the hope that we have, inshallah, that with his coming there will be justice and peace and tranquility in the world, this quest for peace is a universal issue. All people around the world, whether they believe in a religion or not, everybody talks about having peace. The only problem is that peace by itself is not an independent entity. It's actually a result of something else. It is the byproduct or the result of justice. To talk about peace, to search for peace without justice is a futile exercise. There will be no result at the end, because peace by itself doesn't exist in vacuum. You know, you have to bring about justice and then you will get the peace as the end result. You know, look at the biggest institution that we have in the world, United Nations Organization. Even there, when we talk about justice, it is not there. You look at the main powers who actually control that institution. There also, justice cannot be seen. You know, you look at the example of the United States of America, the major power of the world. Whenever they have their soldiers in different parts of the world, whether invited or uninvited, something happens to them. The families of the soldiers who suffered wherever they suffered will be allowed in U.S. court to make claim against assets of that country in U.S. But have you ever heard the other way around? Is U.S. ma'asoom, infallible, hasn't done anything wrong? What about, for example, the Iran Air passenger airline and the passengers who died there coming from, you know, a short flight from Bandar Abbas to Dubai? You know, we don't hear anything about it. I don't know whether Iranians think about it or not, to go to the U.S. court and make claim against U.S. Navy, for example, that, you know, our family members were killed. And what will be the compensation there? And this is where we see that, you know, just to talk about peace, without really bringing about the environment locally, internationally, on a global level for justice, you know, this is never going to happen. Because we have to realize that when we talk about justice or rights, you know, this is never a one-way street. Amir al-Mu'mineen, in one of his marvelous khutbahs, and this is a khutbah where he actually talks about the mutual rights of the ruler and the citizens. From the reading that I have done of Islam, this is the first very clear explanation of the mutual rights of the hakim and mahkum. Never before that was this issue mentioned that clearly. Yes, it is based on the principles of the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet, but a very clear explanation of that comes in that khutbah of Amir al-Mu'mineen. You know, it's amazing that this was a khutbah not given by him in Medina, in a peaceful environment, not in a university environment, not even in Kufa. You know where it was given? It was given in Siffin, where Ali actually was there to face the army of Muawiyah. In that environment, Ali finds time to deliver this very powerful message. And alhamdulillah, it has survived. It is there in Al-Ahl al-Balagha, if you look at khutbah number 216. And there he talks about it. He says, إِنَّ الْحَقْ لَا يَجْرِ لِلْأَحَدٍ إِلَّا جَرَى عَلَيْهِ. He says, haq, when people talk about rights, it will never be in favor of one unless it is also against him. You know, haq has two sides of the coin. One side is your, you know, right. The other side is the duty attached to that right. It can't be only one way. وَلَا يَجْرِ عَلَيْهِ إِلَّا جَرَى لَهُ. And no haq and right can go against you unless there is an equivalent right for you, in your favor. And so this is actually a mutual issue. You know, we have these family disputes many times we hear, and unfortunately, these are all Muslims, followers of the Ahlul Bayt. But you never hear that, okay, you know, I also have committed mistakes. It's always my right, my haq, from both sides, you know, inshallah. But you never hear this, you know, issue that, well, maybe there was something wrong. And this is where we have to realize that when we talk about haq and, you know, rights, it's not a one-way street. It goes on both ways. And this is what Amir al-Mu'mineen makes it very clear. And that is why he is known in the world as the symbol of justice. You look at the contemporary writer from Lebanon, a Christian writer writing about Amir al-Mu'mineen. The title he gives to the book is, you know, Ali Sawt al-Adadat al-Insaniya, Ali, the voice of human justice. And it's not only later people who have thought about Ali in that way. Actually, there was a lady from Yemen, a very prominent, powerful lady, as a poetess in her own right, a supporter of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And she was there actually in Siffin composing poetry to encourage the soldiers of Ali to go and fight against Muawiyah. You know, things changed. During the reign of Muawiyah, her tribe was facing some harassment from the officers of Muawiyah's administration, especially when it came to taking tax from them. And they actually requested her, because of her courage, that we would like you to go to Damascus, see Muawiyah, and lodge our complaint with him. She goes there, you know, and to make the story very short here, coming to the point, he showed his arrogance, uncaring attitude towards her and her tribe. And that is where she started reciting two lines of poetry. And where she says, صَلَّ الْعِلَاهِ إِلَىٰ رُوحٍ تَضَمَّنُهُ قَبْرٌ فَعَصْبَحَ فِيهِ الْعَدْلُ مَدْفُونَ. May Allah shower his blessings on the soul that when the grave took that soul in, that person in, justice was buried with him. فَقَدْ حَالَفَ الْحَقِّ لَا يَبْغِي بِهِ ثَمَنًا فَصَارَ بِالْحَقِّ وَالْإِيمَانِ مَقْرُونًا. He had pledged with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that he will not sell justice at any price. And so he became symbol of truth and iman. And Muawiyah says, whom are you referring to? She says, when I see your arrogance, your uncaring attitude towards your people, your citizens, I remember Ali. And I remember his example of justice. Because I took a similar situation to him, where he immediately raised his hands and he says, "Oh Allah, be witness, I did not ask my officers to believe in this way, to behave in this way." And he wrote the instructions, recalling that officer to further investigate this case. And this is where we see that, you know, it's amazing the way she describes that when Ali was buried, justice was buried with Ali. We long for the day when the son of Ali will come and he will basically bring that treasure of justice again for the whole world, inshallah.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi. كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.